भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एवं सवीर प्रवरा एवं सवीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मात्मनात्मने संयोज्यात्मानमात्मने ब्रह्म भूतो धृतं काले ब्रह्म भूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मानमात्मने ब्रह्म भूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं सवीर प्रवरा त्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मनमात्मने ब्रह्मभूतो धृतं काले त्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मनमात्मने ब्रह्मभूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मानमात्मने ब्रह्मभूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मनमात्मने ब्रह्मभूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मानमात्मने ब्रह्मभूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं एवं स वीर प्रवरा संयोज्यात्मानमात्मने ब्रह्मभूतो धृतं काले तत्याजस्वं कलेवरं word for word evam thus saha
he
veera pravaraha the chief of the heroes, Samyojam, applying, Atmanam, mind, Atmani, unto the super soul, Brahma Bhuta, being liberated, Dridham, firmly, Kali, in due course of time, Tatyaja, gave up, Swam, on, Kalivaram, body. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In due course of time, when Prit Maharaj was to give up his body, he fixed his mind firmly upon the lotus feet of Krishna. And thus, completely situated on the Brahma Bhuta platform, he gave up the material body. Please repeat. In due course of time, when Prit Maharaj was to give up his body, he fixed his mind firmly upon the lotus feet of Krishna, and thus completely situated on the Brahma Bhuta platform, he gave up the material body. Poor part. According to a Bengali proverb, whatever spiritual progress one makes in life will be tested at the time of death. In Bhagavad Gita 8.6, it is also confirmed. Yan yan vapi smaram bhavam tyajatyante kalivaram tam tamevaiti kanteya sadat tadbhava bhavita. Those who are practicing Krishna consciousness know that their examination will be held at the time of death. If one can remember Krishna at death, he is immediately transferred to Goloka Vrindavana or Krishna Loka, and thus his life becomes successful. Prithu Maharaj, by the grace of Krishna, could understand that the end of his life was near, and thus he became very jubilant and proceeded to completely give up his body on the Brahma Bhuta stage by practicing the yogic process. It is thoroughly described in the following verses how one can voluntarily give up this body and return home back to Godhead. The yogic process practiced by Prithu Maharaj at the time of death accelerates the giving up of his body. While one is in sound health and physically and mentally. Every devotee desires to give up the body while it is sound physically and mentally. This desire was also expressed by King Kulashekara in his Mukunda Mala Stotra. Krishna Tvadiya Padapanka Japanjarantam Adhyayva Me Vishatumana Sarajahansaham Prana Prayana Samaye Kapavata Pitai Kanta Varudhana Vidhaus Maranam Kutasti. King Kulashekara wanted to give up his body while in a healthy state, and thus he prayed to Krishna to let him die immediately while he was in good health and while his mind was sound. When a man dies, he is generally overpowered by mucus and bile, and thus he chokes. Since it is very difficult to vibrate any sound while choking, it is simply by Krishna's grace that one can chant Hare Krishna at the time of death. However, by situating oneself in the Muktasana position, a yogi can immediately give up his body and go to whatever planet he desires. A perfect yogi can give up his body whenever he desires through the practice of yoga. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So reading the translation again. In due course of time, when Prithu Maharaj was to give up his body, he fixed his mind firmly upon the lotus feet of Krishna and thus completely situated on the Brahma Buddha platform, he gave up the material body. So we know that enthusiasm is one of the characteristics of devotional service. Usually devotees are very enthusiastic. But generally we don't think that devotees would be enthusiastic to die. But here we see, Prabhupada is explaining that Prithu Maharaj, he was enthusiastic. He was jubilant and proceeded to completely give up his body on the Brahma Buddha stage by practicing yoga. So in the following verses, we're going to see how by the practice of yoga, especially sitting in the Muktasana and elevating the life airs to the different chakras of the body, one may come to the point of getting out of the body through the top of the head. So that's a yogic process which Prithu Maharaj was acquainted with. He knew how to do that. So he was enthusiastic to give up his body because by Krishna's mercy he could understand that the time is over. Whatever mission I had to accomplish here is now complete and I don't have to wait for this body to come to a completely degraded stage and then give up the body forcibly. No, he gave up the body voluntarily. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, it is thoroughly described in the following verses how one can voluntarily give up this body and return home back to Godhead. The yogic process practiced by Prithu Maharaj at the time of death accelerates the giving up of this body while one is in sound health physically and mentally. So the process that he was practicing was supposed to accelerate his death. So generally we see people, they were very anxious to keep living as much as possible. Most of the people, they want to prolong life. If they can increase a few minutes, they'll try, they'll pay any price just to live a little bit more. And Prithu Maharaj is trying to cut it short because he understood, no, whatever I had to do is done. And now I want to go back and be again reunited with the Lord. So Prithu Maharaj is practicing yoga, trying to accelerate giving up his body. So this is interesting. He is eager, he's looking forward for death. And we see that in the life of other devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam also. We see, for example, in the life of Narada Muni, after he got darshan with the Supreme Lord, and he heard the voice of the Lord telling him that in this lifetime, you're not going to see me again. This is only supposed to increase your attachment for me, your desire to come back home. But you're not going to see me anymore. So after this point, he lived a life of complete renunciation, detached from all material things, but at the same time preaching the message of the Lord. He didn't try to commit suicide or something like that. He was detached from the world. His life didn't have any purpose trying to be happy in this material world, but he remained here. And he described his life after that point. He says, Namanya Nantasya Hatatra Papatan. Without any shyness, without any shame, he would chant the holy names very loudly. And he would go all over the world, Gamparyatam Tushtamana, with a peaceful mind, satisfied mind, without any material desire. He would go all over the world, chanting the holy names, Vimado Vimatsaraha, without any envy, without any illusion. Guhyani Badrani Kritani Chasmaran, always remembering the auspicious and confidential pastimes of the Lord. And Kalam Pratiksham, he was always eager for that moment when he would give up his body. So Narada Muni describes his life like that. And Prabhupada says in the purport, right in the first sentence, this is the life of a devotee in a nutshell. He has no material attachment. He is satisfied in his mind, but he goes everywhere chanting the holy name, glorifying the Lord, illuminating others about Krishna. And without any envy, without desire anything, he eagerly waits for the moment when he can go back to Godhead. So Narada Muni was living like that, and then that time came. No? Kala Pradura Bhut Kali. That time came when the giving up of his body and the attainment of a spiritual body happened simultaneously, just as lightning and thunder, the lightning and the illumination happened at the same time. So that's the way Narada Muni lived and the way he passed away. So, but Prabhupada says something very interesting in this purport also. He says that every devotee desires to give up the body while it is sound physically and mentally. So do we actually desire that? No, if we ask here, no, how many of you want to die right now while the body is still healthy and the mind is clear? So that's very provoking, thought-provoking statement from Prabhupada's purport. Every devotee desires to give up the body while it is sound physically and mentally. And then he quotes King Kulashekara, Krishna Twadiya Pada Panka Japanjarantan. No, he prays, "Oh my Lord, let me die immediately. Now that my mind is clear, that my body is healthy, so that I can chant your holy name, I can go back to Godhead. Because otherwise, when the kapha, vata, pitta, the bilis and mucus and all that is choking your throat, how can you chant the holy name? How can you think of the Lord peacefully?" So he prays for immediate death. So I was thinking about this point, no? How can we desire to die? Because at the same time, we know that Krishna wants us to do something in this world. He doesn't want everybody to just commit a collective suicide altogether and leave this world. Krishna wants that as long as we are here, we preach. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world with the mission of spreading the Hare Krishna movement, the Sankirtan movement. And he wants us to spread it all over the world. So how can we reconcile, no, that we have to stay here, we have to preach, at the same time, we should die. We should be willing to die immediately. So that made me remember Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in his book, Dying Before Dying. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he wrote based on his personal realization, when he knew that he had cancer and his death was coming close. And he wrote a book of prayers expressing his realizations in that situation, that he knows that this body is not going to last long. And actually, what should I do? How should I deal with that situation? And the whole book is very enlivening. And it is not... It's not actually a book for those who are dying. It's a book for living a meaningful and empowering life. It's a very amazing realization that Maharaj shares with us. So, and then looking farther, I also found some similar prayers of other traditions. Christians and Buddhists and Muslims, all expressing the same idea of dying before dying. So as devotees, we are familiar with the concept that we have two bodies. We don't have just a material body, a gross material body, but we have also a subtle material body composed of the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. And it's not so difficult for us to understand that this subtle body can die even before the gross body dies. So that's dying before we die. Well, your material mind, intelligence, and false ego, they can die. And you may still remain inside the gross body, but in a liberated stage, just like the example Prabhupada gives of the coconut. When the coconut is fully dry, it is free inside the shell. And if you shake, you can hear the sound. The pulp is not attached to the shell anymore. So a person can be inside the body, but be detached from the gross body. Because the false ego is not there anymore. He's situated in the spiritual position. He knows, the person, the devotee knows that he's actually Krishna's servant. He has nothing to do with his material body, but still As long as Krishna wants, he is inside the body. Just like the coconut pulp is inside the shell, but is now detached from the shell. So we can understand that, but I was surprised to see that in other traditions also, even without having such a clear philosophy or putting in such a technical terms, but they also have some insights into that. So the Christians, they have the mystic death. When they understand that they have to die for this world, they have to die for the egoistic propensities so that they can actually start a relationship with God. So that is expressed by many Christian saints. And then, among the Sufis, I also found an interesting poem written by a Sufi saint. So it's very short, I'll just read for you to get the idea. It's a lady saint called Rabia Basri. So she writes, "Ironic, but one of the most intimate acts of our body is death." She says it's one of the most intimate acts of the body is the moment of death. "So beautiful appeared my death, knowing who then I would kiss. I died 1,000 times before I died." So the expectation of meeting her Lord was so pleasing to her that she was willing to die 1,000 times before the actual death of the physical body came. "Die before you die," said the Prophet Muhammad. "Have wings that feared ever touched the sun?" So sometimes we are afraid, so we don't dare, no, to actually go beyond our limitations. "I was born when all I once feared I could love." So the real birth, she says, is when all that which before was causing her fear, then she could love that, she could appreciate, she could see the connection with the Lord. So some points struck me in this poem. The first is that she says the most intimate act of the body is dying. No? And in one of the last classes that Bhaktivedanta Maharaj gave on this topic, he gave the analogy that sometimes in a stage where a group of people is performing a musical, how do you say, a group of musicians, no? Someone is playing guitar, someone is playing the drums, someone is playing the keyboard, and different musicians are playing together. So they're all together there on the stage. But suddenly, one of them, maybe the guitar, or maybe the keyboard, or maybe the drum, he starts a solo. And in that solo, the spotlight goes on him. And all the focus is on him now. Even though they were all playing together before, now he's alone, and he's giving his show. And for 1 or 2 minutes, he's giving his own show, and he's alone. So Maharaj said, life is like that. We may live with so many people, we may work together with so many devotees, but when death comes, then you are in the spotlight. No? You're doing your solo now. And this is probably what she meant. She says the most intimate act. No, you cannot really share that much with so many other people. It's something that you have to go through within yourself. So it's very intimate. And also, she was eager because she was expecting that after that, she would meet her Lord. And then she says that actually, that was her birth, when everything that she feared, and she was feeling some kind of repulsion before, that became a source of love. No? So that was very interesting, because it reminds me another story of a great saint, Saint Francis of Assisi, who before, as a rich boy, as a son of a rich man, he used to hate and to be completely aversive to the lepers. Whenever he would see a leper in the street, he would turn and run away. And he was horrified by seeing lepers. But after his change of consciousness, or maybe the moment of his change of consciousness was one day when he met a leper, and instead of running away, he ran towards him to embrace him. So what was the reason for repulsion became the reason for him to actually express his love. He could see beyond the material body. That is the death of the false ego, the identification of this body, the attachment to this body, and to identify and to be able to perceive something beyond the material body. So we see that lives of devotees usually have that turning point, that somehow that attachment, that orientation towards body with a body conscious life, there is a turning point, and then is a spiritual life starting. No, so it's like a second birth. And also in the preface to this book, written by His Holiness Shachinanda Swami, he says, just as we have two births, right? The physical birth and the spiritual birth. We also have to have two deaths. No? The death of the subtle body and the death of the gross body. And if the gross body, if the subtle body dies before the gross body dies, then you don't have to take birth again. But if the gross body dies and the subtle body is still there, not the mind, all the impressions, the material desires, the false ego is still there, then I have to take another body to continue. So the turning point is always there, no, in the life of a devotee. Also, Radhanath Swami, in his book, he tells a similar story, when he met lepers in the Himalayas. And first he was repulsed by that, but then he looked in the eyes of that leper lady, and he could understand. He could see, you know, the love that was flowing through her eyes. He could see the soul through the window of her eyes and understand, you know, that there is something much beyond this gross body. So all these experiences, they show us that it's a very important process. And throughout this book, Maharaj is explaining the importance of actually dying, you know, for the false ego, giving up the false ego before it dies. And it's a process. It's a whole science how to do that. And it's something that we have to do at every moment. We have to be always trying to live in the present without attachment for the material body, and in a way that prepares us for the final moment, for the final test. And looking in my own life, I have a turning point also, which was a kind of death. A death for my old life and a start of a new life. And it was definitely a very important point in my life, but it's not the end. I see it was a beginning of a process, but it's not the end. The process is still going on. And so many more challenges are to come. But still it's a very meaningful moment in my life. It's 14 years ago, when I first had the glimpse, the desire for spiritual life, that happened after climbing a big mountain. Because my passion in life was to climb mountains. From maybe 12, 13, 14 years old, I started climbing some little rocks, and then gradually started climbing the Sugarloaf in Brazil, and then traveling South America and trying to climb all the big mountains. And in 1995, I think, I climbed the Aconcagua, which is the biggest mountain in South America and one of the biggest in the world. It's almost practically 7,000 meters. And higher than that, we only find mountains in the Himalayas. So that was a very great achievement for me at that time, because the most important thing for me was climbing mountains. So finally, after many years of practicing, of training, and then I was there. Took 1 month camping in the base of the mountain and trying many times to reach the top without success, and seeing other expeditions of people from all over the world. One group from Russia tried, and many of them came back with frozen fingers. They had some even had to cut fingers off because of frozen. And another group from two climbers from Korea tried, and they died, and I saw the bodies being dragged by the rescue team, and just in front of me, they dragging the two bodies in the snow, and still after 1 month trying hard, then we reached the top. And I was there thinking to myself, no, what am I looking for? Am I satisfied? And I was very intrigued because I was feeling that I'm very excited in one hand, but on the other hand, I feel I'm not fully satisfied. So that made me ask the question, why am I not satisfied? What would satisfy me? And the first answer to came is Everest. Huh? I'm very happy that I climbed the Aconcagua. It's the highest of America, but it's not the highest of the world. So I'm, from one side, I'm satisfied, but I'm still feeling, huh? I want more. But then I did an exercise, no? Intuitively, I started thinking, so let me imagine I'm sitting now in the top of the Everest. How would I feel? And I started trying to meditate, how would be the sensation of sitting on top of Everest? And the realization I got is that I would be feeling exactly the same thing. Still dissatisfied, looking for something higher. So that was a shock, because I realized that even what I consider to be the most wonderful thing in this world would be dissatisfying, not fully satisfying. So then what is left? So then I started thinking for some time, maybe for half an hour, sitting there and thinking, what could make me actually happy and satisfied? And I got some idea. I have to go to India. And I decided, promised to myself, next vacations, next year, I'm not going to climb any mountain, I'm going to India. And I came down, and I had four friends who were waiting, because they are feeling sick. They are vomiting and feeling sick because of the altitude, so they didn't manage to reach the top. But when I came back, they are eager to hear from me. So how was it? And no, congratulations. And then they asked, so what are you going to do next? What's the next mountain? And I said, I'm going to India. And they were all shocked. I said, well, come on, no, what's that? Where did you get this idea from? I said, no, I don't know. I'm going to India because I'm looking for something else. I'm looking for something that can really give some answers in my life. So 1 year later, we went to a pizzeria and we ate pizza together and we celebrated, because I was coming to India and they were going back to the Aconcagua to try again. So I came back to India and I spent 1 month. Somehow Krishna was very kind and merciful, and he was like, I felt like, now I look back, it looks like Krishna has guided me by the hand. In the airplane, one Indian man told me, no, don't waste time in Delhi, no, Delhi is such a hellish place, no. One Indian man, old man, he said, actually, if you're going to India, from the airport, I suggest you take a taxi and ask to go to Vrindavan. So it was very amazing because so many arrangements happened. No? And I took the taxi and the driver asked me which guest house. And I said, I don't know. So he said, oh, I know one Videshi Mandir. I'll take you there. So I reached the Videshi Mandir, and in the gate there was an Italian devotee who used to play in the Kirtan 24 hours. And my English was very poor, but I knew Italian, so immediately I could speak to him, no? I heard his pronunciation. He tried to sell the tapes of Ahindra Prabhu, Prayers to the Dust of Raja. It was not CD yet, it was tape, no? And he was trying to sell that to me, and I said, are you Italian? And then immediately I connected to him, and he said, basically he engaged me in the kirtan. And for 1 week I was playing in the kirtan, playing kartalas, very badly, but they tolerated me. By the mercy of that devotee, no? Actually, all the devotees, they wanted to kick me out. They didn't know why this devotee is allowing this person to play. I was in jeans and completely nothing to... I didn't know even who is Krishna. But I was playing kartala there. And he told me that... Anyway, it's a long story. Many things happened. But 1 month later, when I went back to Brazil, I was determined to chant the holy name. I had a japa mala, I had a Bhagavad Gita. I was vegetarian, and I said, yes, I really wish that I can continue this spiritual life. I don't want to lose it, no? And then I reached Brazil, and the first news that came to me is that my four friends who went to Aconcagua, they wouldn't come back anymore. The mother of one of my friends called me, crying desperately and saying, no, they were caught in an avalanche. Nobody has any news of them. They disappeared. Nobody can Nobody found their body even. So she wanted me to go there and try to find them or find the bodies. And I had to convince her that's nothing to do because they died almost in the top, but in the most difficult side, which is very difficult to reach. And even if someone would find them, nobody would be able to take them out from there. So then it was a very shocking experience. It was really something which became like a death, because whatever I considered to be life before, my life was based on climbing mountains. That was the highest thing I knew. And the friends that I have from 12 years old, that I have been doing that with them, they were no longer there. And so from one side, everything was finished. And from another side, everything was starting. I was starting a new life, a new goal in life, a new glimpse of what is real life. So that was a turning point. And after that, I really felt that actually so many times I risked my life. So many times that could have happened to me. And often we would tell each other, with my friends, would say that we know we can die at any moment. Because every vacation and throughout the year we would be climbing in Brazil, and every vacation we would go to the big, big mountains which are very dangerous. And for all these years, every time I went to some of these big mountains, every time I witnessed some accident like that. The first time I climbed a mountain, a whole group of the most experienced climbers in South America was doing they're climbing a famous volcano. And it was an easy climb. It was something that I was doing as my first climb. And so it was not difficult. But these most experienced climbers, just a few days after I climbed, a neophyte, a new person. After a few days after I climbed that mountain, these big, big guys, no? One of them had climbed the K2, the second highest mountain in the world, which is more difficult than the Everest to climb. So all these big people there, they all died together in an avalanche. So every year would witness people dying like that. And I knew any moment can be my turn. So when I became a devotee, I was looking back and thinking, Krishna, I could have died so many times already. Only by your mercy I'm here. Maybe you have some plan for me. So now, whatever life I have, I want to give it to you. That was the impression I got at that time. No? And then I really wanted to give everything up and just surrender to Krishna. And it happened in the due course of time. But then, nowadays, no, as we look to our lives, we see that still we haven't surrendered fully. We haven't died fully. We still hold on to some hopes and some attachments, some expectations in this world. So it's a process, as Maharaj said here. And we have to actually, it's a whole science. I was planning to read something from here, but let's see. I'll just read some short parts and then we conclude the class. So in the introduction, which is by His Holiness Shachinandan Swami, he starts saying that philosophy means to keep death in front of your eyes. And he said this is Prabhupada's statement. Philosophy means to keep death in front of your eyes. Death is not to be ignored. It can teach us important lessons for life, because death forces us to look for what is essential. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj also, through his essays here, through his prayers, he says that death puts aside all the secondary things and helps us to put first things first. So it's in that sense it's very helpful. Another point that Shachinanda Maharaj puts here is that this book is not a book for those who are dying. This book is really a book on living an empowered and empowering life, provided we take the implicit lesson to heart. Die before dying is a famous expression for the death of the false ego, a goal all spiritual traditions aim for. And then also he explains that the word Namaha, we are constantly saying Namaha, no? Which we generally translate as obeisances, but literally means not me, means the death of the false ego. I'm taking, usually we're always putting ourselves first. So now we stop doing that. We take out the false ego from the front. So that's Namaha. No? So we're saying that again and again. And then he says that it's actually nice to die before dying, because the real life starts after the false ego is over. No? One can live a better and more fulfilled life after the ego has been unloaded. It is only by illusion that one thinks self-centered attachments are making one happy. Happiness always lies in freedom, not mental bondage. Isn't it a source of celebration when a prisoner can get rid of his prison life and start his real life? The best and most joyful example of die before dying, in my eyes, is the butterfly. So he explains, no, how the butterfly dies, no, as an ugly, earthbound worm to become a beautiful butterfly who can freely fly in the sky. So that's a beautiful example of dying before dying. Then, coming to the first prayer, first meditation of Bhaktivedanta Swami in this book, he explains that on August 5th, 2004, I truly began the process of ending my existence on this planet, in this body. Because on that time, he found out that his disease practically would have no, there's no turning back. So, but then Maharaj says that just having a material body is itself a disease, because the body incarcerates the soul and limits the soul from its most blissful, fulfilling activities. So that's a disease. Being the material body is a disease. Not the cancer is a disease. When people have this encounter, they feel angry, bewildered, and cheated, wondering why it must happen to them. They would like to accept that these kinds of disasters happen to others and not to themselves. But the sadhu is paradukha dukhi. A devotee feels the miseries of others and enjoys the happiness with them. The feeling of anger and bewilderment are due to not understanding that the Supreme Lord's mercy comes in many different ways. It is easy to accept God's mercy when we get what we want. This is like mercy coming from the front. So this I find very interesting, very important for us to meditate upon. He says it's very easy to accept the mercy when it comes from the front. But when it comes from the side, it can be bewildering. And even more so when it comes from behind. When it comes from behind, it can be extremely disturbing, because the conditioned jiva loves to feel that he or she is in control. This, of course, is a big illusion, for we are always at the mercy of the Lord. We must remind ourselves that the Lord is always finding ways to send out his love. So Krishna is trying to find ways to send his love to us. No? As we remind ourselves of this, it becomes easier to take advantage of the many opportunities that manifest. Life is full of adventures and opportunities to serve humanity and glorify the Lord. When a person can accept everything as an expression of Krishna's mercy and love, nothing can be too disturbing. Every moment becomes another opportunity to serve humanity, worship the Supreme, and express gratitude. August 5th was truly a rebirth, for it gave me a chance to die to live. I, the beggar, am full of gratitude for receiving the Lord's mercy from the front, from all sides, and yes, most wonderfully, from the back. Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bol.